Many in society today want biblical morality replaced with amorality. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Thanks for joining me. I'm Dr. Fred. We're back talking more about cultural Marxism and the effects it's having on society and has had on society for quite some time. Call it multiculturalism or political correctness. Whether the word changes, it doesn't matter. The meaning stays the same. And cultural Marxism cannot work if society is based solidly on the Bible or even the U.S. Constitution or Bill of Rights. These documents and texts are resolute, guaranteeing certain rights and responsibilities. They invoke the blessings of God and seek to cause us to look beyond ourselves and to Him for His purposes. Moreover, those who take public office and who swear an oath on the Bible during that time of being sworn into their office, they promise to protect and defend the U.S. Constitution. But for too many politicians, this has become a very debatable point. Now, I mentioned Rousseau before, a French philosopher who attacked the Enlightenment for their heavy reliance on reason. Well, Rousseau wanted biblical morality to be replaced with amorality. And this can only be accomplished when society moves away from, in this case, America's original moorings to biblical principles. It can't happen as long as the Bible and biblical principles from it course through American society. Biblical morality must be overthrown as far as Rousseau is concerned. This is why Islam, for instance, is given such freedom to do what Muslims believe needs to be done in America. Instead of inspiring them to assimilate into American culture, they're encouraged to remain as they are and attempt to force American culture to capitulate. It's what gives rise to the attitude recently heard in Executive Director of CAIR, C-A-I-R, Mustafa Carroll's words when he said, quote, "If we are practicing Muslims, we are above the law of the land," unquote. And he was referring to the United States Constitution here in America at that point. And he recently spoke and mentioned that at an outdoor event in Texas. This is too often the mindset of Muslims. They need to obey no one but Allah. That's what they say. With this type of attitude, it's easy to see why we are all on the road to confrontation, and it's not going to end well. Now, rather than embracing aspects of American society, officials of CAIR are frequently at odds with the laws of this nation, America, as well as others. And as such, they constantly take up one lawsuit after another over aspects of American society with which they disagree. They hope to change society to reflect their beliefs, or at least allow them to have their beliefs and express those beliefs, which are based on the Quran and Sharia law. Now, why do many Muslims disagree? Well, because as Carroll stated, quote, "Islam does not have Texas in the current condition, the current socio-political condition that Texas is in." What is this condition that Texas is in? Why is Texas on the brink when you look at Texas in comparison to 50 states? Education. Percent of population graduating from high school is 46. High school completion rate is 46. The scholastic assessment rate, the SAT score in Texas, is 47. The percentage of population with no health insurance in Texas is first. Those without health insurance, Texas is first. He likes to repeat himself. He goes on and he says, "When you look at the state of a child in Texas, the percentage of uninsured children, Texas is first." Yeah, he said that. "You shouldn't be filing legislation against Islam when you look at Texas. Islam is not the problem. Islam is the solution." And then he goes on to praise Allah, unquote. This is stated and believed by many because Islam is seen as the victim among the politically correct. This is the new morality that is at severe odds with biblical morality, on which the United States law and founding documents are based. Now, in truth, this new morality is really nothing but amorality, and it is solidly anti-biblical because of it. It can do nothing to create a better society, just as it can do nothing to create a better human being. That does not matter to cultural Marxists, because ultimately what they want is the pursuit of freedom solely for freedom's sake. This is going to happen, by the way, they believe, with the removal of biblical standards. In the end, what they wind up with is something far less than true freedom. A move away from love-based virtue towards self-based autonomy is unreasonable, and it's a flight from truth. I'm reading a statement here from AmericanThinker.com. Contrary to the opinion of many who pursue freedom merely for freedom's sake, modern radical autonomy has victims, as did its Jacobin predecessor. And finally, cultural Marxism will result in a slothful societal euthanasia. The real question is whether the country will reject cultural Marxism as a near-term act, or by default, an act of extinction. That's a good question. Now, we need to talk more about this, and we're going to move into this. And by the way, I want to mention that a lot of this series on political correctness is based on a book I wrote called Falling Away. And like any of my books, they are all available free of charge as downloadable PDFs by going to studygrownow.com, and then click on books, click on a cover, and then look for the PDF icon on the lower left portion of that new page, and click it, and a PDF will begin downloading to your computer. As far as we know, all of our files are completely virus-free. You don't have to register with us to download a book. You don't have to pay us anything. You don't have to ask permission. I'm giving you permission. The fact that they're there is permission enough. And all you have to do is click and download. Now, let's continue with this whole cultural Marxism thing, because it includes what's also known as racial injustice. And, you know, I read something a while ago, and I still couldn't believe it when I read it, but there it was in black and white. It was a report from the Inspector General regarding the interior of one division within the Department of Justice, the DOJ, and the, I guess, what was referred to as the racialist dysfunction there. I first came across this at J. Christian Abrams' website, and his website is pjmedia.com. Now, what's interesting here is what he says. And interestingly enough, all of this has come to light at the same time that Tom Perez's name has been bandied about as the man Obama wants as his labor secretary. Well, what's the connection? Perez is the assistant attorney general for the Civil Rights Division of the United States Department of Justice. Now, if you're interested in reading the entire 250-page report from the inspector general, if you're, you know, you can go to pjmedia.com and find the download link there. But one thing you'll notice as you read this is that the report has to do specifically with the voting section of civil rights. In referencing the report, J. Christian Adams points out that it, quote, was prepared in response to Representative Frank Wolves, Republican Virginia, outrage over the new Black Panther voter intimidation dismissal. In response to the report, Representative Wolves said, the report makes clear that the division has become a rat's nest of unacceptable and unprofessional actions and even outright threats against career attorneys and systemic mismanagement. Goes on to say, former voting section chief Chris Coates and I both testified, and this is Adam speaking here, both testified about the hostility towards race-neutral law enforcement by the Justice Department, unquote. Now, the new Black Panther voter intimidation situation is referring to the time in 2008 when several New Black Panther members in Philadelphia were videotaped standing outside one particular voter precinct. Near the door to the precinct, one of the members carried what appeared to be a nightstick. The two were eventually arrested. People called the police and complained. So they were arrested. They were charged. They were found guilty. But during the time they were found guilty and awaiting sentencing, the DOJ, of which Eric Holder had just taken the reins of leadership, essentially made the case evaporate completely. It was as if the situation had never occurred. Now, in another case in Noxubee, Mississippi, it was alleged that whites became victims of voter intimidation. Why did the DOJ refuse to step in and do anything about it? Well, according to the report, it was, quote, because white citizens were not historical victims of discrimination or they could defend themselves, unquote. So apparently, because there's no history of victimization and because we all allegedly have enough money to fight our own battles, we don't need to rely on the Department of Justice. In reality, though, the Department of Justice is there to protect every citizen of America, regardless of race, creed, or religion. But there you have it. So because white people are not considered historical victims of discrimination, white people, according to the DOJ, have no claims through the system. In essence, then, the DOJ, Eric Holder's DOJ, of which Tom Perez was part, and at the time that I first wrote this, was currently being ready to take over as labor secretary, obviously has no interest at all in helping white people who are victimized by blacks. What does that mean? It means that whites are on their own. Now, we actually have a report that details a plethora of racist policies within the voting section of the Civil Rights Division of the DOJ, led by Tom Perez, Obama's pick to be Labor Secretary of the United States. This is amazing, but don't expect to see it on CNN. May not even make Fox News. You've got to dig for these things, folks. You have to go to alternative news sources, independent news sources that don't subsist on advertising. What did the left do when these allegations hit the fan several years ago, though? The very same thing they do today. They cry. They whine. They name call and do everything in their power to denounce, castigate, denigrate, destroy, vilify those who would deign to believe that there could possibly be members of the black community who are racist toward whites. Apparently, racism is something only whites can actually be responsible for because we have no victimization history. One person on the left from 2010 put it this way, quote, race baiting has been a central element to the phony New Black Panther scandal from the start, despite the fact that right-wing activist J. Christian Adams' accusation do not stand up to evidence, but court filings earlier this week, in which the Obama Justice Department is asking a federal court to extend its injunction against black leaders in Mississippi for discrimination against white voters, should end once and for all the scurrilous accusation that the Obama administration is hostile to prosecuting black defendants on behalf of white victims, unquote. Now, those words that I just read were written by Jeremy Holden, director of research at Media Matters. For those who aren't aware, Media Matters is funded by George Soros. We're going to go into this next time a little bit more because we don't have time right now. But what's very interesting is that this guy, Jeremy Holden, turned out to be wrong. It turned out J. Christian Adams was placated, I guess you might say, by the justice system. He was found in favor. It turns out that what he was saying had been truth. We'll talk more about this next time. And I thank you for joining me today. And until the time we meet again, I pray that the Lord would open your eyes to show you how blessed you are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.